If you could not find Somali on a map, you'd be like, I'm glad that we shot that guy. I'm glad that we killed those people.
Yes, you definitely think that like Somalia, you think Somalian pirates have one absolute control over the seas and can allow boats to come and go from ports as they deem fit. And you also think that they just like drive oil tankers to work.
I can't get over that fucking scene. Yeah, holy shit. I cannot get over that scene where that dude is dressed like a fucking Rasta man, and he's like, nice pool, by the way. And I'm like, what are we doing here, dude? What is this shit?
The fuck are we doing?
He was dressed as a Rastaman, Bumbla Kwak, or whatever they say, the Jamaican say. Would have been cool if he said that, you know?
He's got like gold chains on in the CIA black site base. I can't, dude. I can't.
Very, very silly. Raphael, thank you so much for just like bearing with that. What has it been? Like over an hour at this
No,
point?
no, no. Th th
Just
thank
like,
y'all. Like, thank y'all for not just giving up. Because it's like I forgot. Like, I suck at technology now because of phones, and now I'm like, yeah, they must be destroyed now.
especially don't want to waste your time because, as you said, you did watch Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado for this show. Which I've loved the first one, and I've been putting off watching this fucking sequel for years and years and years. And I was finally like, you know what? Fuck it. It'd be fun to do for the show.
I mean, like, I don't get why didn't they just call it Dia del Soldado? I mean, come on, like,
I
you're why
one of
not,
the
right?
questions of many I have about that show.
We're kind of picking it apart this morning. Before we go into it, hey everybody, welcome to Propagandos, episode 10. We got a hell of a special for you. We've got a special guest, Rafael De Leon. Thank you so much for joining us, and please tell me if I bastardized your name
No,
at
you
any
did a good
point.
job, but you did a good job. I'm guessing because you live in Houston, so you know your way around Mexican names. Shout out to the Chopped and Screwed music that was popular in the mid-2000s.
Hailing from Houston. As a Texas gringo myself, Spanish is one of the many languages I do not speak. It begins and ends with gastronomical items.
Thankfully, because I took Latin, I can read and pronounce, but I cannot understand for the life of me. I desperately need to learn Spanish and Mandarin. The whites are being
Yeah.
replaced, so I need to learn something.
Yeah.
Which features a
Yeah.
lot in these two films. So wait, one thing I've been dying to know forever is about even Sicario 1. So Benicio del Toro has probably what, maybe 20 lines of dialogue in Spanish.
Yeah.
And Benicio is playing a guy, I don't know if he's originally from Juarez, but he is Mexican. But Benicio himself is famously Puerto Rican. And I
Yes.
wondered if his does he have a discernible Puerto Rican accent?
They have him limited Spanish, so you really can't tell, but you can tell. You can tell that it's like, oh
Really?
yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like, like can I go far ahead and talk about like the first movie, or are we gonna go
Talk about
in?
whatever you want,
Yeah, yeah,
dude.
talk about
Okay,
whatever.
yeah, like the famous like bridge shootout scene. Like, come on, like, what do you mean you're gonna go up to the guys and say it's like compas, compas? I'm like, I couldn't tell if it was like bad subtitles where he's trying to say like compas, like as in buddies, like hey, buddies, like put the guns down, or like with peace, like compas.
No, 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 no. Compas, compas. Suelte la pistola.
Like, I think like if he was like real Mexican, he'd be like, suelten las armas, güeyes. Something like really loud.
Well, not only that, but in the second movie, instead of like, oh, we're gonna have a scene where he's just like in Mexico, his accent's bad. Let's just have him learn sign language all of a sudden. I
I was
retconned that his daughter was deaf.
unbelievable. And by the way, a lot of his scenes in the second movie, he's hanging out with a Mexican girl and he just speaks English
Yeah, they're
during those.
talking
Yeah.
English.
Yeah. That also makes no sense to me. Like no, like no one's gonna fuck with like a Narcos kid at school.
It's insane.
Really?
No.
I don't know if like the privileged kid got picked on in high school or not in our experience. I don't know. I got picked on, so I don't really know about anybody else.
But I mean, like private schools in Mexico are like a complete different animal, man. Like
Yeah.
when they're that expensive, and when you're dealing with the freaks that are in like Mexico's ruling class, you read up on those dudes, and you're like for example, like the Salinas de Gortari family. They literally shot their maid when they were like 6 years old.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not making this up.
And I assume they got away with it.
They got away with it because they were 6 years old and never had like any psychological, like no counseling after it. It's like, oh yeah, the maid's shot. Kids being kids.
It happens.
Yeah.
That's the kind of shit that happens, dude.
Yeah.
Pregunta, paisanos. ¿Quieren morir?
So to start things off, I first learned about the first Sicario. I did not see it in theaters. I learned about it maybe a year or two afterwards with some screenshots of the most cinematographically lauded scene, which is that twilight assault on the tunnel entrance, right? When everything's in kind of dim early morning light and you just see those operators kind of silhouetted against the like blues and oranges of like a pre-dawn sky, and people were praising this guy Villeneuve or I don't know, should we call him a Villanueva for this episode?
Yeah, Villanueva.
Villanueva, there you go. Daniel Villanueva, famous Mexican director. No, he's Quebecian, apparently. He's French Canadian. And so that was the first time I saw it. And when I watched it, I was shocked. It was minimalist, it was kind of to the point. It was really deep and kind of enigmatic and self-serious in a way that was like kind of the era. Very beautifully shot, really great film. And it turned me on to Prisoners, which I hadn't seen. Enemy, which is one of his first big movies. Enemy's fantastic.
Jake
Gyllenhaal, dude, with the gorgeous Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't know if there's really anything like Sicario that basically isn't a spy thriller, because that's basically what Sicario is.
The first one actually is like a great movie. I enjoyed it. Like, it's well acted. It's tense the whole way through.
It is. It's tense. It's very tense.
One of the reasons it's tense is you really don't even know what the point of the plot is until the third act.
Yeah. Right?
When Josh Brolin's character reveals that he is in fact working for the CIA and that the FBI attaché played by
Emily Blunt.
Churro, you know, it should be for this one, you know. Churro de Mota, you know. It should be.
Stuck in that last little bit out of there. Until it's finally revealed that she's basically just there to give some base legal credence to the operation that they were going to do anyway, basically. Mm-hmm. So not only was this my first Villanueva, it was also the first time I'd seen anything that Taylor Sheridan wrote. And if you watch this movie, you think, this guy's a motherfucking genius, man. He is so fucking good at what he does. The dialogue and the pacing are just all gorgeous. And what did we find out from later Taylor Sheridan works? I'm thinking Yellowstone right now, but also Sicario 2, is that this guy's a fucking moron.
Yeah.
Somebody went back through his, somebody went back through his script and says, we're going to play this cynically, right, for Sicario. We're going to take all of these kind of big, tough guy operators and spooks and cops and all this, and we're going to make everything gritty and feel gross. And when he is in charge of a project or in charge of a world, he plays it totally self-seriously, right? They're exactly as written, meaning they're extremely cool. and there's no depth to them at all.
Right. No, I mean, Josh Brolin looks cool the whole film. Like, his hair looks great. I need to know what conditioner and shampoo he uses, because it's like, man, just like, whoa.
He does look incredible. He's got it's not a Hawaiian shirt, but it might as well be. But he's got like the Columbia fishing shirt on, the flip-flops, the cargo khakis with the zip-off shorts or whatever. He looks cool.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where I think Taylor Sheridan looked at a CIA guy once in a picture and was like, that guy was wearing flip-flops, man. And like, the point that the movie portrays is that he's not a regular cop, right? He's not a regular guy working for the government. He's kind of fast and loose. But then that exists in the first movie in a world that is so oppressive and weird. It like makes him more kind of like mysterious and enigmatic. And then in the second one, he's like, we love torturing people at the CIA. How about I torture you real good? Somali guy that we picked up randomly.
Yeah, his wonderful line where the Somali pirate, which we'll get to how the opening of Sicario 2 is just fucking ridiculous. But the Somali pirate looks at some jugs of water and he's like, oh, you think we're going to waterboard you? Waterboarding is what we do when we can't torture.
You think I'm going to waterboard you, Bashir? Waterboarding is when we can't torture. This is Africa. I can do whatever the fuck I want here.
which I don't think is true. Like, I think waterboarding still torture, but whatever.
He basically looked at the guy and said, like, those water jugs, you remember that from the first movie? Well, we're not doing that scene again. It's just like a straight up callback within the first, I don't know, 60 seconds of the film.
Which that line, even like, it deflates itself. We get no payoff because you're like, no. I'm not going to torture you. I'm just going to blow up your house.
I kind of want to just talk about Sicario, but the compare and contrast between Sicario and Sicario 2 is so perfect that we basically have to talk about both movies at once, I think, the entire episode.
Yes,
you have to.
The first movie is so kind of clean and strange. It reminds me of like True Detective with just like how kind of haunting all of the imagery is. Opens up with this house raid, and then there's just all these bodies in the wall. And by the way, throughout the entire film, it's never explained. These like Mexican, who knows, migrants, or are they cartel workers?
It could be neighbors in the it could be neighbors of that house.
I mean, like, my theory is that, you know, it's like the cartel that was supposed to put them in the desert just got lazy. And they're like, oh, the bodies just kept stacking up. And they're like, good Lord, dude, how do you, 42, you know, if you would have done like, the, you know, two or three at a time a week, like I told you, it wouldn't have been that bad.
They just got way behind schedule.
Yeah.
And they're like well, I mean, my buddy Pedro does drywall pretty good, dude. So I could just stack these motherfuckers up in the house we got.
I like how there was just two dudes there, one randomly playing video games. And it's like, it must have stunk, man. Like, even with the plastic bags, it must have stunk.
I was thinking that same thing about that scene this morning. Just like, how did they manage to just live? I mean, they only had like a couch and a bed. So maybe they didn't live there. Maybe they were only watching it. But it's still, to your point, a lot of dead bodies and some pretty thin drywall that they could just grab and rip off.
In the Arizona heat, too, you know? Like,
I don't know how you guys lived before you started living with women, but that kind of did look like my apartment for a long time. I'm not going to lie. You're like, there's no furniture in his house.
Ultimate man pad, you know, mattress on the floor, body stuck in the walls.
Yeah, and I got 2K on my Xbox. Yeah. Don't bother me.
If you haven't seen the movie, I don't think we're going to do a plot synopsis for this one. But it just starts out, there's this FBI raid, and there's maybe supposed to be some hostages in this house. And they show up, and there's nobody there but the guys that they shoot and arrest as they enter the house. Emily Blunt busts into a back room. There's a shotgun blast, and it blows a hole in the wall. She survives, and she murks the guy, right? And then her partner looks through the hole in the wall and there's a fucking rotten body, and they start peeling back the walls, and the whole house is full of these fucking bodies with plastic bags over them. Just bloody. It's just horribly gruesome. Mm-hmm. It's like a nightmare. And then somebody's breaking into the shed out back. They find a padlock, and that motherfucker explodes and kills a bunch of, I guess, Phoenix cops.
Which is a insane scene where you see a guy crawling. Part of his arm is missing and you can see his brain exposed. Like, it's, part of its skull has like just popped off.
Yeah.
Very gruesome. And that's when I text Alec. I had never seen this movie before, but that's when I text him, I'm like, holy fucking shit, this is awesome.
Like, and you never so find ready. Out what's you never find underneath what's underneath there either. Yep. You know, it's like, whoa, it was important enough to booby trap, which cartels in Mexico very rarely use explosives. That's starting to change a little bit now with the Jalisco Nueva Generación, because fucking with explosives is hard and dangerous, man, especially here in the US.
If you specialize in guns, there's not really much reason to move outside of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's funny that you point that out, because that's one of the first kind of ways that I compare the two movies, right? This highly polished, I'd say like masterful work, and this knockoff that comes later is in the first film, the things that aren't explained are like ambient. Right. They like add to the kind of horror of the show. You never find out why the people are there, why they're dead, why the basement's booby trapped. And all of that just kind of leads to more confusion for the viewer until none of it's really put to bed. But at least the purpose of the plot is revealed. In the second one, it's just schizophrenic. It's QAnon. Right. There's just all these pieces of yarn that should tie different parts of the plot together, but are just kind of left flailing in the wind. It doesn't add to any mystery. It just leads to a kind of frustrated confusion that the movie's not very good.
Yeah. You got that very old trope that's been around since post 9/11. It's like, oh, the terrorists, they're going to come through the Mexican border. And you have like one guy, like already with the explosives, weirded me out that the Border Patrol wasn't even talking in Spanish. Like, even the most, like, Oakley wearing, like, you know, back of their heads looking like a bunch of hotlinks, like, Border Patrol is going to speak, like, basic Spanish.
They have to.
Like, and be like, manos arriba, you know?
I knew. And so the second movie opens with a raid on a caravan of people passing over the border, right? And like a helicopter and stuff. It looks a little bit cheaper. And then there's one guy that as these migrants are getting corralled by like guys on four wheelers and this helicopter, one guy runs off to the side and immediately begins praying in Arabic. And I'm like, that guy's going to explode. And then, and then a bunch of border agents run up to him. And sure enough, he fucking blows up. Oh, my God.
And that era of filmmaking, the Muslim man praying like that is the Chekhov's gun of like that generation.
Yeah.
I don't know what we call it, but that guy's going to blow up. He's surrounded by
the only thing better
military.
If he had like a literal fuse coming out of his backpack that was like lit and like drawing down into it, right? I mean, that's the only thing that would have made it more obvious.
Yeah,
and so but one being a mirror of the other, this is also, by the way, never really explained. We have no idea. A bunch of terrorists break in and they blow up like a Dollar General in Ohio or something.
Yes.
Four suicide bombers for 15 people. What a shitty trade-off.
Dollar General in Cleveland.
It was Kansas City. And I did notice Kansas in that City. Scene, I was just like, how many people died in this thing? Because they all were like, all right, go all the way to the back of the store. Don't strategically like hit parts of the store where we killed the most people. It was just like, I'm over by the seafood in the deli aisle, so I'm just gonna blow up.
How about like waiting for like Black Friday or something like that? Like
anything.
Well, instead of like four dudes to, like, also like America's like swimming in guns. Like, I'm sure
a mall, do anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but a random grocery store in Kansas City.
Well, it is revealed that these people have no ties to any terrorist cells and they're just like homegrown American. So of course they're going to fuck it all up and they're not going to know what to do. They have no training whatsoever.
We naturally gravitated to the Dollar General as our target for a terrorist act.
Yeah.
Nothing here is a dollar even.
Yeah.
How can they get away with this?
I was going to say the American version of that British film, what is it, Four Lions or whatever?
Yeah. That's a fucking TV show worth making, dude. That's what Taylor Sheridan should be cranking out.
Something that you said just a second ago, Alec, is the two movies open up with scenes that don't get resolved and don't relate to most of the rest of the plot. But with the first Sicario, you see that it's a political message of it doesn't really fucking matter. There are things bigger than this right now, like to the point of the police officer who's not named until the very end, Silvio, the crooked Mexican cop. There are people and things and events in this grander drug war that are inconsequential. And in Sicario 2, it's just bad writing. It's just plot holes.
Small people with small lives that get destroyed, right, as just a result of the violence on one or the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Silvio ends up being dead in a way that's not even really discernible from the broader violence at all, despite the fact that it was a very, very, very special way that he died as opposed to everybody else. He ends up getting murked by like a super secret agent on his way to kill some jefe of the cartel. And yet you can't tell that. Nobody from the outside could ever see that, because the way Villeneuve kind of takes Sheridan's writing and flips it to where even the movie's really not sure if the thing that gets accomplished is meaningful at all. That killing this cartel boss is going to do anything else but create a vacancy at the top of a hierarchy that's immediately going to be filled by someone else and is not going to make a difference in whether drugs get imported into the United States or people get killed as a part of that importation.
Yeah, I'm really glad that this is what we're talking about in episode 10, because it does kind of borrow from all of our previous episodes up to this point. My thesis, this movie doubles as a propaganda theory framework and a securitization theory framework. And that because these movies both have footage on a military base, a U.S. military base, the Department of Defense is involved in this. And we have been talking about Oswaldo Zavala's book, The Drug Cartels Do Not Exist, on like how drug cartel, and Raphael, please interject if I'm like talking out of my ass here. The book does push a theory that the drug cartel violence in Mexico is supported by the state, and it's allowed by the state, and it in fact like helps evacuate resource rich areas for a neoliberal agenda. And so these movies are trying to get the audience to be afraid of the cartels, afraid of violence at the border.
I've heard about Zavala's book. I haven't read it. I think there's some theories in there that are interesting. I think the cartel stuff tends to be a lot more horizontal than people realize because of the fact that a boss isn't always going to be calling the shots. You're going to have local franchise guys, you know, being a little more aggressive, taking their own initiative and whatnot, because, you know, guys like Chapo, they were in the 80s, they were like involved with like the Guadalajara cartel. They would have been like, you know, middle management back then. I also think with like the whole securitization thing is that, you know, the whole trope of like the border being dangerous, it is on the Mexican side, depending on your city. But if you look at the stats for like the crime rates and the murder rates in like all the major Texas border cities, they're low. Like McAllen low, Brownsville low, El Paso super low. El Paso, I think, has like the lowest murder rate in the country.
And I think the film does mirror in that way. The film does mirror basically a narrative that I used to hear a lot, Rafael, which is that the Mexican drug war will come to roost in the United States, right? And that's a thing that's repeated, I think, at least twice in the first film that didn't really happen in that way. The idea of Los Zetas hanging people off of a bridge, for instance, right? Like a decapitated corpse. That never happened in the United States, despite the fact that I think there were quite a bit of people within the U.S. security state, and maybe the Mexican security state for that matter, that did want that to be a vision for the populaces of those countries.
Yeah. You know, the freaking out about the Zetas, who are now pretty much largely defunct, was like a very real thing. And but I mean, it also kind of minimizes the fact that a lot of these cartels have like ties to like America to begin with. The Zetas obviously having a whole bunch of dudes like trained in the School of the Americas. You have like the Gulf Cartel that has like really close cultural ties to like Texas, like, because it's the same dudes that like live on the north and south side of the border. Like Abrego, who was born in Cameron County where Brownsville was, he was one of the first guys to really start wholesaling cocaine like back in the 80s. And the Gulf Cartel's pushing 100 years old as well. You know, they've been around for a long, long time.
So Rafael, does it matter? So this movie is, I guess, set in present day and it comes out in 2015. The references here are to the Sonoran cartel, but my understanding, at least from like Wikipedia, is that the Sonoran cartel doesn't exist by then. Does that matter at all? Is that worth commenting on?
I think it's like they don't want to use the names of real cartels so they can be like, oh, you know, we don't want to get threatened type stuff, which at this point, like, you're successful movie guys. Go ahead and get threatened. They're probably not going to do anything to you.
Villeneuve is worried that they're going to come to Quebec and fucking murk him.
Yeah.
They're going to break out the guys from the dude that wanted to invade Venezuela. That guy.
Yeah, there you go. So one thing that the movie portrays, I think, really well and kind of mirrors the real world is how foreign for Americans our kind of propaganda tries to make both Mexico, Mexicans, cartels, and the drug war. Despite the fact that, especially as like a Texan, but I mean, I can also tell you this as like a guy who's lived in the Midwest, we are surrounded by Mexicans pretty much all the time, right? Like they're your neighbors. They're people that probably work at your work, right? They're certainly people if you're in any way touch construction, they're all around you. They go to the grocery store with you. Yeah. And despite that fact, this movie, I think, is one of the best at making Mexico a fucking scary ass place and Mexicans as scary people. That this drug war, the drug business, and somehow the Mexico that business destabilizes and affects is a frightening, scary place. And the people in it are also. I wonder, how do Mexicans feel about that?
I mean, like a lot of it, it's kind of like, oh, wow, people are like, you know, it's exaggeration, because even with all the propaganda and like the fear mongering, like Mexico's still like a massive expat destination. Like, I mean, if you have like the money and can work from home, why not move to Cuernavaca where it's like spring all fucking year? Why not move to Tulum? You know, if you're like already an influencer or some shit, like, and it's pretty safe in those cities.
I want to ask you, there is still political violence and drug-related violence in Mexico. Just this week, there was a mayoral candidate in Mexico who was assassinated. I hope I'm getting this name right. Bertha Gisela Gaitan in Guanajuato. And she was a member of the Morena Party, and she was assassinated. And I don't know why.
I mean, I'm not from that state. I'm from Nuevo León, the kind of a kid from the Northeast. But, I mean, like, local politics can be shady. State politics can be shady. I know the state neighboring to us in Tamaulipas had a couple of previous governors that were linked to both the Zetas and later the Gulf Cartel. So maybe she was involved in stuff. Maybe she wasn't. But that's just the nature of, like, local politics. Like, in a lot of ways, I think, like, you know, Mexico is culturally, like, 175 years behind from, like, the U.S. because you read back to, like, the stuff that was happening with, like, organized crime, say, you know, shit, even back as far as, like, Tammany Hall and stuff like that. And then with, like, Prohibition and the height of the mafia. And you're like, oh, shit, like, that would happen here.
Yeah. Okay.
Just no one would talk about
murders
it.
Murders in the streets. I mean, that's Chicago, right? And 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not that different. All right.
Yeah.
Well, from a different period, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that kind of speaks to, like, what I'm saying, which is that propaganda generally, and I think Sicario is a good example, the first, at least maybe the second, that the kind of narrative at large is that force, an American force, Mexican force, can't really be trusted, right? The cops, the state police, the army, maybe even. American force is going to at least be able to do something about the drug trade. And I think what's interesting about the first one is that I don't think the movie makes a good case that that's even true. And I was wondering straight up, Rafael, are actions by the U.S. state militarily, are they useful in addressing the drug war as you see it?
Hell no, they wouldn't be. I mean, we know the history of the U.S. and the region. You know, the fact that, you know, mainstream American popular culture now accepts, you know, the 9/11 attacks as a bit of blowback is a good thing. But the fact that the U.S. doesn't accept that, you know, the drug war slash dirty war in Central America causing blowback by via the migrant crisis and, you know, the escalation of the drug war in Mexico, I guess it annoys me that Americans don't think that way.
I've definitely, and watching these movies and thinking about this stuff, I've become very frustrated that, to your point, Alec, that, like, this movie says that doing things by the book won't change anything. Even doing things in the skunk works way won't do anything, which makes me so frustrated because if you look at Dan Crenshaw's Instagram page, he uses Sicario and the show Narcos as a way to, like, justify we need to invade Mexico. And he's not the only person who thinks this.
It's funny that this came out before that entire narrative appeared in kind of, what was that, maybe the mid-Trump administration.
Yeah.
People started running on this idea that, like, you know what, we just need a full-on military intervention in Mexico. We need to depose the Mexican government, I suppose, or at least locally.
And right? I think this came around when AMLO got elected.
Kind of, sort of. I mean, I think that they're hyping, you know, now that you're seeing stuff like, oh, AMLO's narco ties, even though, like, the witness or the guy, like, you know, talking about it is not a reliable witness and whatnot. Like,
is this like I sucked Obama's dick for crack?
Pretty
style?
Much. Okay. Pretty much.
Okay.
Even though, you know, there is, like, straight up history of, like, other Mexican presidents having ties to, like, narcos. Like, I mean, Salinas de Gortari, that family was tight with, like, the Gulf Cartel. Shit, like, Salinas de Gortari's dad knew the founder, Juan Nepomuceno Guzman. Like, they used to be buddies because he's the Salinas de Gortari's family. They're from a small town pretty in Nuevo León that's, like, probably about 30, 40 miles from the U.S.-Mexican border. The whole – oh, God, I can't believe I forgot his name. Calderon the whole theory with him is that he was giving – preferential treatment to the Sinaloa cartel because they were kind of from, I don't think he was Sinaloa, and I think he was maybe from Guanajuato, but his preferential treatment to them in the mid-2000s.
We've also been talking about how maybe cartel is a misnomer, and because cartel emphasizes that people are working together to drive a market, and to have rival cartels seems like it's not the right terminology. Can anyone speak to that? Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
I think the idea here is that cartel implies that the entire drug business is somehow unified. And the kind of quiet part there is that to meet that level of threat, right, that's almost state-like in its enormity, you need the power of a state militarily to combat it. You've got a hierarchical structure of violence, supposedly, on one side. I think that's kind of what Cartels Do Not Exist is arguing, that the hierarchical nature of the cartels is a misnomer. Yeah. The idea of the unified drug economy or industry is a misnomer, but they exist because then you can face them as almost like a foreign army with the kind of state capacity that the United States and actors within it would love to have financed, for instance, by Congress, right? Yeah. That all of this is a funding vehicle, so we can have all of the incredibly cool military bases that you see showcased in both of the Sicario movies. Mm-hmm. You have fucking Black Hawks and shit, tanks and armies of APCs stationed on the border, right? Like, I'm not saying we shouldn't have those things if you have them, right? If you eventually want to go to war in China or Iraq or wherever, right? You're going to have a bunch of equipment. You're going to have to keep it somewhere. But the fact that it's at the border in like a kind of suspended state of readiness, maybe, or that it's used or allowed to be used by this kind of subterfugal force, right, that Sicario implies exists, that we know exists from previous eras, from the 70s and 80s, at the very minimum. That's kind of what cartel as a word is trying to imply,
yeah, right?
And the worldview it's trying to create. That's the propaganda of that word.
And also to what you're saying about the hierarchical structure of the drug war, like, doesn't that make it much easier for the United States to like charge people in absentia in like a RICO case? Like, isn't that kind of why the term Al-Qaeda was bandied about? Or like, well, we need to say that everybody is like organized and led by one person so we can charge this one person.
I think that's because they need, like, the lawyers need a justification for being able to go after these people, right? The fundamental idea there is, like Sicario 1 or 2 kind of imply, right, that killing a boss is going to seriously hamper these organizations because of their hierarchical nature, right? It's not just about revenge, although for Benicio del Toro's character, it obviously is, right? It's that by killing the guy at the top, the CEO, you can destroy the company.
Yeah.
Hilarious, because I think the movie admits that that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
If it did work like a company or an army, that still wouldn't be true, right? Like, you can bump off a lot of generals and have an army that's still very effective, right?
Yeah.
You can kill a lot of generals and people and actually make an army better.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you know, it's like, just think back to how like the set that started off as like, you know, the bodyguard wing for the Gulf cartel.
Yeah, the guys, you know, that were in charge of those guys were getting old and lazy, and eventually, yeah, they got usurped by a brutal and efficient structure that used to be their bodyguards, right?
Yeah, because they're kind of like, oh, look at these. We're the ones actually risking our lives, man. Like, they're the ones making the money. You know, I want to get that money and be fat and lazy like those guys, too.
And that's why we have this podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, propaganda used to be hosted by our bosses until we took them out. Do we have anything else to say about Sicario 1 before we move on to Sicario 2?
I mean, like, I just have a few things to add because I had to take.
Yeah, go for it.
I mean, yeah, I did like the ending. I did like the ending of, like you said, like, yeah, nothing changes.
Yeah.
You know, that whole final scene with Benicio del Toro and the boss where it's like, what do you think we learned it from?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, like, I thought that was a great scene.
The fact in the end that he repeats that line, right, that this is a place for wolves and you're not a wolf.
Yeah.
You know, things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. And you're just not cut out for this. Push papers somewhere.
Or even that absolute final scene of the soccer team or the soccer match. And then like you hear the gunshots and everyone looks back. It's like even taking out Fausto does nothing.
Yes.
It doesn't end the violence at all.
And I love the cynicism of the first movie. The ending is just phenomenal. It's very good. Yeah. It's very dark, brooding. You feel kind of bad after watching it.
I would love to know what changes because the Department of Defense, when you know they're on set, they make recommended changes and they make mandatory changes. And I would love to know the difference between those within this. I would also love to know when you're making a movie, you're given the script, and sometimes the director takes liberties with the script. And I would love to know what Denis Villeneuve did that Taylor Sheridan did not sign off on, and what he did sign off on.
I was gonna say, I wonder if, like, in the original script, maybe it was the Delta guys just wanting to take the drugs. I mean, knowing how involved, like, you know, U.S. Special Forces have, like, thinking back to, like, oh yeah, Colombia, like, oh yeah. Navy SEALs go to Colombia. They come back with like a heavy bag full of cocaine. Like, who's to say that they didn't want to be like, oh yeah, we're going to steal like, I don't know, like 100, 250 million like in cocaine and sell it ourselves.
Yeah, there's 1,000 pounds of coke lying on the floor, right? Like, yeah. This is a black off. Like, just grab that shit, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you?
We should also talk about, Rafael, you sent Alec, who sent this to me, the CIA wrote a review of Sicario. Which was such a bad review. It was a good review of the film. Like, they liked the movie, but they essentially said, this movie says we're corrupt. We're not. Moving on.
It's basically just them going like, nah, like, we don't do that.
Which I'm going to post into show notes. Please, please.
You
please
have to.
Turn on your VPN.
I found
and
that,
this.
And I'm like, this cannot exist.
It's on their web. It's on the CIA.gov website. It's awesome. They saw the movie. They don't appreciate it. By the way, an interesting thing. So they mentioned a bunch of other movies that feature this. They're in their quotes, CIA is evil, in quotes, right? This is just like the America bad thing that all the defenders talk about, right? Yeah. This quote-unquote CIA is evil narrative. And they mention 3 Days of the Condor, which is interesting because 3 Days of the Condor, I believe, had a CIA liaison on it. They mentioned this as a kind of like independent movie that just like has a narrative, right? That's like painting them in a bad light. And it's like, motherfuckers, you helped make that. What are you talking about?
So it's 3 Days of the Condor, Clear and Present Danger, which is the Jack Ryan story, JFK, and then The Good Shepherd.
By the way, the CIA is up Tom Clancy's fucking ass. Like, how dare they say that, like, well, these movies are kind of, you know, questionable, and they're like, they've been feeding Tom Clancy intel for 30 fucking years. Get out of here.
Yeah. I think they knew what they were doing, and they're
trying to pretend like he's talking shit.
They mentioned the Jason Bourne movies too. So they're trying to like make us think that like, oh, they're acknowledging that people lie about the CIA, so we trust them a little bit more. Like, that's what I think.
By the way, all those movies, fucking bangers. Every movie that they list on here, sick as fuck.
Nah, I didn't like The Good Shepherd very much, but everything else I thought was pretty good.
Even the blacks, they got their music. Famous line from The Good Shepherd.
Oof.
Matt Damon, not his best.
No. Well, wasn't that was Robert De Niro's directorial debut, and I don't think he directed a movie since then.
He famously has gout, and one scene is shown with like half his leg sawed off. You're right. The Good Shepherd does suck. There's no good like CIA bits, I don't think.
I don't think so.
I don't even know if they murk anybody.
They do. They throw Matt Damon's son out of a plane, I think. Don't quote me on it. I think it's because he loves a woman of color and they like kill him or something.
He's got a black girlfriend.
I think so.
Because, not in this country.
Yeah, it's not a great movie, if I remember.
I mean, hey, I don't want to praise Mossad, but fucking Munich is pretty sick.
Munich is cool.
They fucking murk motherfuckers in that movie. Holy shit.
One thing I'll say about The Good Shepherd, we might want to rewatch it because when it first came out, I was of the mindset that The Sopranos, when I was watching it, I was like, the therapy scene sucked. Go back to the strip club. So maybe now, as an adult, I can be like, oh no, this is good.
So you want to be a Sicario? Let's talk about your future.
So speaking of sick movies where they murk motherfuckers.
Yeah, Sicario 2, Silly Cario. Where they further the securitization of the border by introducing ISIS.
Hey, Somali pirates. If you fought them in Call of Duty, they're in it.
Yes, this is definitely the Call of Duty universe. Taylor Sheridan, co-writer on a Call of Duty movie, I'm sure.
I love that the Somali pirates portrayed in this movie are rich and have everything they
famous
need.
Famous.
Yeah.
So I think we mentioned it before, but this movie opens with a really inexplicable plot line that I literally don't think leads anywhere, because it's not even the reason that Josh Brolin's character gets brought in to do the secret op that's most of the movie. It's just like, a vehicle for him to be like, we love torturing people. And by the way, did you know that we have drones that can shoot missiles? And
yeah,
I could do it. Watch. Here it is on my laptop.
It's very frustrating. They don't bring the drones shooting missiles back. And the fact that like they at the opening scene, they show at the border, there's more than just Mexican. Like the border is how everyone in the world gets into this country. You have an Asian man who's missing a lot of teeth, which I thought was like, okay. And then you have like this Muslim guy who's praying and blows himself up. And then later on in the movie, when they go back to that like coyote camp where they're smuggling people across the border, it's only Mexican.
Connor's problem is he's like, they go to the camp and he's like, where's all the Chinese guys?
Yeah. DEI at the border.
That's what you need. Yeah, I thought there was a diversity writer on this fucking film. What happened?
It is interesting. Have you seen, I mean, I think we talked about this maybe in the first couple episodes, but if you see videos of like people interdicting migrants at the border nowadays, they'll just be like a group of like 10 guys from Senegal, right? They're just like, yeah. I don't know, I heard it was nice over here. You know how long it took me to fucking get here, dude?
Yeah.
They better let me in.
Channel 5 had some really great stuff on the border crisis in the past couple months. And it does show it's like it's a lot of different people trying to get in to America through the southern border. So anyway. Sicario 2, what a mess. It is very much a like we're getting the band back together minus Emily Blunt. Josh Brolin gets the go ahead to start a war amongst the cartels. Yeah.
Well, they can't pull the trick on you twice that Benicio del Toro is a hitman that works for the CIA, right? So they're like, we're just not going to have any mystery here, right? We're going to follow Josh Brolin. We're going to shadow Josh Brolin in a day of, right? Find out a bunch of terrorists, go to Somalia to torture a guy, back on a plane, go back to the United States, sit down in a meeting in Washington, go talk to the Secretary of Defense, right? He tells us, I think we need to start a war with Mexico or something.
And I don't need to remind you what happens if they figure out that it's us.
Makes no fucking sense.
It's time to do something in Mexico.
It's something that the Republicans have been wanting to do for a while is declare cartels as terrorist groups, which probably wouldn't work. It would probably fuck up with like a lot of banks on the border and like in the U.S. as well, so, which is probably why they don't want to do it. And it would just be like a law enforcement clusterfuck.
That sounds like a funding thing to me. Every time I hear about something like that, we're going to reclassify something as something else. I'm like, there must be a slush fund for fighting terrorism that like Customs and Border would love to get their fingers in or something.
There probably is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what the crux of the film is. It's like in order, we have to go to Mexico in order to stop ISIS. And so I told you before, it reminded me of one of the seasons of The Wire where they say like, look, all the funding for local drug trafficking policing has dried up. Unless you are funded by Osama bin Laden, you're not going to get any kind of funding whatsoever. So I think that's kind of what this movie is following. Because when they realize like, oh, ISIS, these were not ISIS people. These were homegrown terrorists that blew up a Dollar General. They immediately like, the project is done. You got to kill that little girl. You got to kill your best friend. You got to kill everybody and come back home.
I think this is just Taylor Sheridan going like, what's worse than drug trafficking? Oh, yeah, terrorism. What if we could add that in there?
Yes. There's a parallel between this movie and the first movie, and that like there is a subplot that does eventually tie into the greater narrative that follows a young boy living in McAllen that is working with his cousin for the cartel.
Can I say a few things about that? That was clearly not McAllen. McAllen had way more palm trees. My dad's from Hidalgo County. So I know what it looks like. I'm like, well, this is clearly not McAllen.
Yeah.
It just shows the suburbs and Raphael's like, boo.
Well, yeah, and I'm like, okay, I hate to be like that's not the Rio Grande Valley, but also someone's going to be like, go nerd on me. The Rio Grande Valley is not a valley, but a river delta. So let me go ahead before someone says that. But no, that was clearly not McAllen. And Reynosa does not look like that. Like, I'm like, it's not on a hill. It's flat. Like, it's pretty flat until you kind of get to the middle of like Tamaulipas or Nuevo León.
Well, that just speaks to the different directors. Like Villeneuve, he really
did it.
I can't believe it. I can't believe I did it. But he is so meticulous and pays attention to so many details, down to the fact that Emily Blunt's character and Silvio, the crooked cop, both smoke the same cigarette. And it's like a fake brand. It's like a small little detail. And Alec, what you said is that you never see people when they show satellite images, they're moving. Whereas Stefano Solima, the Italian director of Sicario 2, he just doesn't give a fuck. Where he's just like,
yeah, it's just an aerial shot. Yeah, those are like my shot. Kind of, I'd say like war nerd style nitpicks, right? Is the first one does such a good job. Every time there is an aerial shot, whether you don't know if it's from a drone or from a satellite, but it is moving. It is continually moving and changing angle, which is like, I don't know if I've ever even seen that in another movie. And it's such a cool effect.
And Stefano Solima, he has this like kid, his backyard is literally the border wall. It is not subtle. It's not like, oh, I live in a border town. It's like, no, I can look outside and see the wall right next. And then one thing you said is that the silencer sounds in Sicario 1 are very realistic, whereas the silencer sounds in Sicario 2 are just like, pew, 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 pew.
They have really great just like muffled gunshot suppressor noises in the first one. And in the second one, they do the laser thing. It's like in the first 5 minutes of the movie, they have that pointless plot line where they go to like Somalia. In it, I guess a bunch of Delta guys shoot some poor fucking Somalis that are guarding this hovel where this guy's living, and they do the laser sound. They do the pew, 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 pew. It's totally silent. Oh, it's such a disappointment. The second one is just like such a shitty knockoff of like the first.
It feels
right?
like
in
a,
so many ways.
It feels like a standalone spinoff. Like it feels forced. Like we said earlier, there's no mystery. We know what the plot of the film is, and it makes no sense.
I guess the first one is about drug trafficking, and the second one loosely is about human trafficking, I suppose. So one of the first questions I have for you, Rafael, if the cartels make so much more money trafficking people than drugs, why do they traffic drugs? This movie seems to believe that you make way more money not selling cocaine, which I find dubious.
Well, I mean, like, it's also, you know, the cartels engage in something American companies do, which is called diversification.
We need to synergize this cartel.
I actually think, you know, back to go back to that conversation about whether to call them cartels or not. I mean, I think a useful term is like outlaw capitalist.
Ooh.
You know, like
I think I might steal that. Yeah. Cut that from the episode.
they care about making money, man. Like,
it's not one thing or the other thing.
Yeah. So yeah, they're diversified. I mean, granted, like lots of people are making a lot of money off of like just both moving drugs and that. And oftentimes, like when it comes to like people smuggling, you just have people that have their little local operations and they'll just send a cut to like the local cartel who's just at that point just kind of running a protection racket.
I have heard that coyotes basically kind of get licensed from a cartel, right? An armed group that's doing drug trafficking. And then if you kick up some money, yeah, go for it, dude. You can transmit people across the border. We don't give a fuck.
They call it piso. Pretty much like a floor tax is what they call it. They call it piso.
Which at that point, the cartel effectively is just a mafia outfit, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just a king criminal organization under which other organizations exist and either get stamped out by force or they kick up money.
I mean, that actually, in Mexican-Spanish parlance, sometimes you'll just see cartels and, like, organized crime be referred to as, like, la mafia, but not as in the Italian mafia, but as an organized crime outfit.
So I do want to mention, while we're talking about this outlaw capitalist and the diversification of their industry, my favorite scene in the whole film was where the little boy that's working for the cartels and the smuggling operation, he walks over to the minivan and it's really spooky. And then the light in the minivan turns on and it's a white lady feeding her baby. And she goes, "You find me a better paying job. I'll do that." And I thought it was so funny.
Texas suburban mom.
Yeah. Just some soccer mom. That's like, "Oh yeah. And on this, I do this in Mary Kay. It's a great way for me to make money."
I mean, that's more likely than you think. I mean, I've heard of cartels using like attractive women is like drug mules, because if they get stopped, like, oh, okay, well, they just kind of flirt their way out.
Oof. Wink at the cop.
Yeah.
Some things in this movie that really stood out to me. I mean, we mentioned the further securitization, talking about ISIS being involved in human smuggling with it's ISIS, drug cartels, and Somali pirates are all working together to undermine American supremacy.
That way it was almost like a George Bush callback. If you remember those, like the couple years following 9/11, there was this really concerted effort to tie like everything that was bad together.
Yeah.
Right. Not just like the axis of evil where somehow Iran and North Korea have like a lot going on, but everything from right, like drug smuggling to terrorism to illegal counterfeiting operations were all somehow going to be amalgamated into part of the same network.
It's happening right now where you're talking about like, oh, China and Honduras are working together to get fentanyl onto our streets to absolutely destroy our cities. But in the meantime, China is also stealing all of our intellectual properties. The existential threat is always there. And they're always coming for you and your kids. Like it's fucking terrible.
It might be your Dollar General that a Muslim terrorist explodes in Kansas City.
Fucking stupid. So some things in this movie that like the inconsistencies. Alejandro, Benicio del Toro's character, takes out the man who killed his wife and daughter in the first movie, Fausto. But in the second one, when he's rehired for this mission, Josh Brolin's character tells him, like, we can get the guy who is really responsible for killing your wife and daughter. Reyes, who we never see. We only see his daughter. So it's the retconning of just like, nope, there's a bigger threat. There's a bigger threat that Alejandro knew about. It's not like they said, hey, we figured out that someone was actually behind it. Just Alejandro always knew this and never talked about it in the first Sicario.
I like the idea that he just loves murdering people at this point, right? That he's like so grief-stricken. He's just like, just tell me. I love it when people tell me that some guy was involved in the murder of my wife. Right. Like, because I just love shooting people at this point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this little kid that gets involved in the cartel business, he's been doing it for like a day. Basically, Alejandro ends up getting kidnapped by these cartel members and these smugglers. And so they drag him out into a canyon and they just tell this little kid that just started working for the cartel, you got to kill him. And so he shoots him. Well, 1 year later, that kid is covered in gang tattoos and he encounters Alejandro, who miraculously survived because he got shot through the cheek.
Yeah, he got the 50 cent, man, through the cheek.
Somehow missing all of his teeth so it didn't just destroy his fucking mouth.
Yeah, it went right through. Didn't even hit his jaw at all. He's fine. And then he says, my second favorite line of the film, it's the final line in the entire movie, which is, so you want to be a Sicario?
So you want to be a Sicario.
I love that scene because he's standing there like a concerned and disappointed dad. Like, he's like, I just found weed in your room, son.
Yeah.
Like, I found your bong.
Yeah.
Which, if he's going to train him to be a Sicario, he should have been like, why did you get all those tattoos? Yeah. Everybody's going to recognize you now. You have a fucking spider web on your neck, you idiot.
Yeah.
You didn't even go to jail. What the fuck? What happened to you, kid?
Yeah, you're advertising, man. Like, why do you think Alejandro always wears business casual?
Exactly. And he always looks like he's just coming out of a meeting.
And that's why Josh Brolin wears flip-flops.
A business lunch. So basically the plot of this movie is that Benicio del Toro is back. His handler, Josh Brolin, is back. But before we get to Benicio, Josh Brolin has a sit down with, I think, literally the Secretary of Defense, where they're like, we need to start some shit in Mexico because terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
Because reasons. We need you to fuck shit up in Mexico. Can you do it? And by the way, the cartels can't find out that it's us. And Josh Brolin's genius plan is, instead of what we did the last movie, which is kill the head honcho of one of these cartels, he's like, that ends wars. It does not.
No.
He's like, that ends wars. What if we kidnapped a cartel boss's kid? There's just no explanation of kind of... Okay.
There's a few quotes that stick out that I wrote down. It's like, I think one of the guys says to him, it's like, we need you to do what you did in Iraq. So something about like a divided enemy being easier to fight. I'm like, we led the fucking ISIS in Iraq. You know, we caused like a civil war. Like, do we really want this guy doing what we did in Iraq?
This movie came out in 2018, by which point basically everybody agreed that Iraq was an enormous debacle. It was even especially in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know what? Just run it back, dude. Whatever you were doing in Baghdad, we love it.
Yeah.
Great job.
I do love his little smart-ass quirk when he replies to the Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of Defense asks him, what's your definition of terror? What's the definition of terrorism? And he just says, it's up for you to decide.
Ooh, got him,
bitch. Yeah, got him, coach.
That was a very silly scene.
We need you to do what you did in Iraq. And he's like, what, create ISIS? By doing what he did in Iraq, I guess they mean kidnap the kid of a cartel boss. This one turns out to be a daughter.
They decide we're going to kidnap the daughter of Reyes, who apparently was Fausto's boss that we had never heard of before. So they decide they're going to kidnap Isabel Reyes, who's the daughter of Reyes, the leader of it's not the Matamoros cartel.
I think they just call it the Reyes.
The Reyes cartel.
Or whatever, yeah.
I guess it would be like an analog for like Sinaloa, right?
Yeah, I think Matamoros is, I'm pretty sure that's like Gulf cartel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And little aside, like your high school Spanish isn't failing you. Matamoros literally means more killer.
Yeah.
last name. Like, don't be freaked out by that. Like, that's literally what it means.
Okay. So they decide they're going to kidnap her. There is a cool scene where they kidnap her and they basically make it look like it was the Matamoros retaliating. Okay, let me back up a little bit. First, they go into Mexico and Benicio del Toro kills the lawyer for the Matamoros cartel. And Rafael, you're doing the
the finger gun?
Yeah, which Benicio runs up to him, puts his finger on the trigger of his gun and just like turns it into an automatic, basically. I don't know what purpose this serves. But
it looks cool.
It looks fucking cool. Yeah, the same purpose that all of this movie serves, which is it's fucking cool.
It looks cool. Yeah. They killed a lawyer, and then they decide, all right, now we got to hurry up and kidnap the daughter of this cartel leader. So it just looks like constant back and forth retaliation when really the CIA is behind everything.
Okay, I like the aesthetic choice of using the ski mask with the two holes, like, because it just looks cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you go the full vision one, yes, it's more practical, but the two-hole ones just look cooler.
With the glasses on.
Yeah. No, the dude with the glasses ruled, and I was thinking,
I love,
like,
that he came back for this movie.
Yeah. No, the only thing I was telling my wife is, like, man, what if he had, like, frames where his eyes look like bubbles from Trailer Park Boys? I would have ruled hard.
He just had, like, Coke bottles?
Yes.
That would be fucking sick, dude. I like how the one dude also had, the skull face, a bandana. It's just like, okay, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the rhinestone hats, too, you know, like, that was kind of, like, in for, like, a while. Like, you know, the rhinestone hats.
Yeah.
Like,
Josh Brolin puts on a balaclava and then puts on, like, a gas station hat. Like a cowboy bar hat. It's awesome.
It's so
like
cool.
A belt buckle ass fucking hat. Holy shit.
They kidnap Isabel Reyes, cover her ears, cover her eyes, and they take her back into America. I believe in McAllen. And they
Corpus Christi Air Base first.
Yeah, we're at an air base.
Yeah.
Right. So they take her to Corpus Christi Air Base. They make her think that the U.S. military rescued her from the cartel. So she trusts them. It's a very...
Another part of the plot that does not end up mattering.
No.
It was cool.
It was cool, but it meant nothing. They gain her trust, and then they're like, all right, we got to take you to your daddy in Mexico so we can gain his trust and further destabilize the country. On their way to the Reyes cartel, it turns out that the police escorts they have are paid by the Matamoros. And they turn around and they just start like shooting everyone. There's a massive shootout where I heard 12, 14, and 25 Mexican police officers are killed by the CIA operation gone awry. They're just like, all right, we got to run to the border. Isabel escapes in the middle of this because she's so freaking scared. And Alejandro's like, y'all go on ahead. I'll find her. And then I'll catch up with y'all at the border. In the middle of all of this, the Secretary of Defense is like, you killed too many Mexican cops. We're canceling this operation. You done fucked up. That's when Catherine Keener, who plays Josh Brolin's handler or something. I don't fucking know. Yeah. But she's just like, hey, you got to kill the girl and you got to kill your best friend. So he's like, I don't want to do all that. Throughout all this, Alejandro and Isabel are like, all right, we're going to be smuggled into the country by these coyotes. And so that is how the coyotes recognize, like, hey, Alejandro is guy that works for the U.S. We have to kill him. So they put a bag over his head. They take him into a pit where they shoot him. He lives. And Isabel, poor Isabel, her character at the very least, is grabbed by men three times, and those men are immediately have their heads like exploded by a gunshot.
Standing next to this girl is very dangerous.
Yeah. So she's, by the end of the movie, she's just catatonic because she can't like handle people just getting blown up.
People keep exploding right next to me, dude. I'm just showered in blood.
And a very, very, very cool scene. Josh Brolin and crew take these Black Hawk helicopters. They cut off the smugglers on the street, and they're just like, we're going to obliterate you, and then we're taking the girl home. Or they're supposed to kill the girl, but Josh Brolin decides,
Josh Brolin grew a heart, and he's trying to put her in witness protection.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. Like, I'm like, dude, like, where's this 180 coming from?
It's fucking Taylor Sheridan. This is, it's fucking Taylor Sheridan. He just can't, everything has to be Goldilocks. It has to be extremely brutal and badass, but it's got to have a heart. And if you watch any other Taylor Sheridan shit, it's all like this.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen Yellowstone. So this is just like, to me, the better ending would be, it's like, we need a ransom. We're holding your daughter. You know?
Or it would have been, say, he just fucking blows her away, right? Yeah. Just do that. By the way, he's going to put her in witness protection. This bitch is worth like $1 billion. You think she's not going to find a way to call her dad and be like, yo, you got a private army? Come get me.
Yeah.
I don't want to live in the United States. I was in a fucking private boarding school. I had a mansion, bitch. Get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
They got me in Iowa.
Yeah.
I want to get out.
It makes no sense. I can't imagine.
She's going to find a phone someday. She's going to go to a payphone. This is going to be a fucking huge mess. Kill her.
Well, luckily, because she's now in witness protection, and I think the kid's name is Miguel. I'm not 100%, but the kid who shot Alejandro that Alejandro finds, the last line, so you want to be a Sicario? Let's talk about your future.
So you want to be a Sicario.
We're getting ready for Sicario 3, Capos. That's the official name of this thing.
It's coming.
Wonder who's coming back for that.
It's got to be, I mean, Brolin and Del Toro are going to do it.
I mean,
it's
like,
going to be bad.
Oh, it's going to be bad, but it's going to rule, though.
Yeah.
Like, be bad and good at the same time.
Sicario 2 is so inexplicable, I think, in so many ways. Just because, like, the writing's bad, the direction's, like, not nearly as ambitious as Villeneuve's. But it's undeniably cool.
Yeah.
For all of its faults, just like the first movie, they get access to maybe even more like cool shit in this one. They landing fucking real. That is not a CGI shot. Yeah. They landed real Black Hawks on like a highway in the middle of, I don't know where that's shot, but maybe Mexico, maybe somewhere else. They're on army bases. They're surrounded by awesome shit. If they do that for a third one, I'll probably pay to go see the motherfucker, right? Like,
well, yeah, if they make a third one, Raphael, we got to have you back on so we can talk about that one.
Like, no. I mean, I'm trying to think of like other narco cinema that's been like recent, but like
Danny Trejo was in American Sicario that came out in 2021.
Which, I mean, shit, why not make like a biopic of, you know, Americans that have actually gone to Mexico, like someone like Edgar Valdez Villarreal, known as La Barbie, who ended up Laredo kid that ended up being heavy hitter for like the Beltran Leyva guys.
I'd watch that. That's like the Irishman. Scorsese needs to make this movie.
Yeah, he wouldn't need like the little shoes to make De Niro taller, you know, because or whatever. But no, that would actually be I mean, the dude's still alive. Like, I'd love to hear what he'd have to, you know, if he would ever like write a memoir, I'd probably read that shit.
He probably knows that his life rights are worth a fucking fortune. He's like, dude, I'm the coolest motherfucker of all time. I'll take $10 million, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm not settling for a penny less.
Yeah, I mean, then the dude was hanging out with like a former like Mossad guy, apparently, too. Wanted to mention, totally skip me, but horrible Spanish in Sicario 2 during the newscast.
El abogado del presunto líder del cartel de Matamoros.
Yeah, Matamoros cartel leader, abogado asesinado, which makes no sense in Spanish. It would be like...
Wait, is it really like fake Spanish?
Yes, it's poor.
Hell yes.
Written badly. I'm like, that's like, you just get a guy to like spell check that. Like, it should have been like, abogado del cartel de Matamoros asesinado.
I'm curious, would it be common for like a newscaster to mention it when there's a hit that a specific cartel was suspected of doing it on Mexican TV?
Yes and no. Like, it just depends on like how obvious it is. Cause I've heard some news, like one of the things in Mexican parlance is that you'll hear cartel shootouts referred to as, sometimes it won't be explicitly referred to as cartels. They'll be called armed civilians.
Interesting.
Yeah. Civiles armados or something like that.
Almost like vigilantes? Is that the implication? Does everybody knows what that means, right?
Yeah, like armed civilians being, it's like, okay, they're armed with like long guns or something, but you don't explicitly know if they're cartel guys type of thing. Just kind of.
Oh, I see. Yeah. People who basically aren't cops.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll hear like, you know, células del crimen organizado or something like that, not explicitly naming cartels, you know, organized criminal cell or something like that.
So in the second movie, at least the American kid that's, you know, being brought into this Coyote organization is paid a lot of money by comparison to his Mexican counterparts, right? I think they point out in one of the first scenes he's introduced to some lookouts that are basically just standing on the Rio Grande waiting to see, spot border patrol or maybe waiting for a time to cross. It's not really clear. And yeah. He says, those guys don't earn shit. You can as an American, but those guys don't earn squat.
Yeah, they earn like $20 or $30 a day.
And then in the first film, there's, of course, the subplot with the state police officer, the Mexican state police officer. And he's shown as being, I mean, let's be honest, right? Like lower middle class, right? They're living in a house. He's living with his wife, but it's not a nice house, right?
Yeah.
He's got a broken front window. You know, it's not great. Would people that are in the kind of lower levels of a cartel operation like this, right, essentially an internal mule within Mexico, would they be at that kind of low level economically?
No, the houses would look a lot nicer.
I would have thought so.
And one of the things about Sicario 2, like this is a terrible, I don't think it's a terrible nitpick, complete lack of trucks when they're like in Reynosa and like McAllen. I'm like, dude, like... this makes no sense. Like trucks are popular. Trucks and SUVs are popular for a reason with like cartels. Like a muscle car gets like a lot of like attention, like blacked out or like a white, like F-150 or like Suburban. Like
what was that car down there? Was that an old Firebird or was that like a, they basically have like an 80s muscle car that they're riding around in. Probably again, cause Taylor Sheridan was like, that's a fucking cool car. They should drive that in my movie.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like I think like, oh, you're in McAllen, you're going to be driving like an F-150 or like a Silverado.
Just... like literally everybody else in South Texas.
Yes.
So I've got a question about both of those 2 points. So you're talking about the crooked cop having, you know, realistically, he would have a nicer house. And realistically, the cars would be a lot better. So it seems like these movies reinforce the idea and the narrative that the narco is flashy and ostentatious, and Mexico is so poverty stricken that of course people are going to just like end up working for the cartel. Would realistically portraying these scenarios challenge that narco narrative so profoundly that it just like debunks it completely?
No, I think if you were to like realistically portray it, it would like shock people's minds. Oh wow, like people in Mexico live decent lives even if they're like middle and working class. Yeah, like, oh, shit, like, two-story house that looks pretty decent where they have, like, you know, mini-split AC. That's probably where I would have, like, put the cop living at, you know, in real life. But since this is a movie, they're going to be like, he's a little crappy house, could look better. But
I like how this middle-class guy, he's like a state cop. His kid plays on a soccer field that is just dust. It's just crazy. And it's like, dude, I fucking lived in like an ex-Soviet country and we had a turf field at the school, right? Like, come on, man. Yeah. It's not like... Yeah.
And these movies portray Mexico and Mexicans as like dirt poor people living in a shithole, but Somali pirates have their own private pools and like, and very,
these
very
Mexicans
nice
need life. To move to Somalia, brother. Yeah. He's fucking kicking over there. Y'all crossing the wrong border, brother.
Very, very ridiculous. Very, very ridiculous portrayals.
I just want to know what I'm getting into.
Kate, you volunteered to get on this train because you know you're doing nothing in Phoenix. Yeah, you're just sweeping up a fucking mess.
So Sicario 1 portrays, I think, like from a propaganda standpoint, like a kind of a liberal vision of the American security state, of our job in kind of intervening internationally. It's very slick. It's very minimalist. It's actually quite a quiet movie, right? It's the pacing is slow. Let's just say it's an intellectuals film, right? The motherfucker won like the Palme d'Or. Yeah. Right at the Cannes Film Festival. It is a fancy ass fucking movie. It's a highfalutin movie. And I think that the political point that it's making is also in that trend, which is to say, I think a kind of liberal side, the kind of person that would watch that movie and internalize the message and say, and kind of agree with it, right? Like, you don't want to live outside the law, but we just have to. Things are just too complicated, right? That kind of a little bit too smart idea that the kind of Obama administration, by the way, I'm thinking Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, kind of embodied, of having to be tough and do subterfuge the way that this movie's portraying, but smartly. Right, is so perfect for the tail end of the Obama administration, right? Like, we're going to do drone striking instead of just invading foreign countries. We're going to, you know, use the CIA to topple the Assad regime instead of just invading Iraq. It just, it kind of feels very in that vein. At the same time that, you know, the ATF is boondoggling, losing guns to gun runners on the Mexican border, right? Like, Sicario stands out as the kind of movie that they would make if they had to give the logic for what they were trying to do, right, in that era. And the second movie feels like the Trump era. It comes out in 2018. The logic is just a fucking mess. And it's just a bunch of guys going like, well, we got to do something. And isn't it fun to fuck shit up? And isn't it fun to fly fucking Black Hawks? And what if we shot all these fucking evil motherfuckers in the street of Mexico City? Wouldn't that be cool? It feels like the Trump administration, like at least I guess the supporters of the Trump administration felt, right? Because obviously the people working within the state, even under the Trump administration, were not the kind of rampant morons that I think that Taylor Sheridan is. But it feels like the Trump administration felt, at least to me.
I'll say this. When I watched this movie, knowing it's 2018, the Trump administration is in full swing, like the Trump administration's Department of Defense is what was consulting on this film. Because the opening scene took place in Kansas, and this is me revealing I'm a fucking idiot, I thought, oh, this is where ISIS-K came from, because K is for Kansas.
I was going to add, like, I feel like the movie wants to make, like, some points, but it just goes back to, like, it's straight, like, Trump-era propaganda, where it's like, I think there's an exchange with, like, Brolin and Catherine Keener, where it's like, Keener says, you think change is the point?
Where, yes.
Because they don't end on that ambiguous ending like in the first one. All of those discussions, all of that shit's like just doesn't matter, right? Because you save the girl, Alejandro like lives. Change isn't the point, you know? Like if you could like, you know, expand, if the movie could have expanded on that, like it would have made sense. If it could have ended on a note where it's like, oh shit, we keep making stuff worse.
Now that we have Raphael here, now that he's telling me that like the Spanish is all broken in the second movie too, it just feels so perfectly Trump administration, right? Like just a cheap, shitty knockoff, right? Like something that somebody probably should get sued over, but you're going to run the clock out on that one and your company's not going to exist by the time they do, right? Like this feels like a tax dodge compared to the first one.
This is an action movie about border violence brought to you by the administration that signed off on Trump in front of the burrito bowl on Cinco de Mayo. Like, it's too, you know, perfect.
That's what rough, like that thing you were saying where like none of it ties back in. It's trying to make a point, but it can't. It's like the Trump supporting kind of like MAGA person that goes to like the school assembly meeting and is just like, and another thing. And she actually, yes. I heard that she was talking about trans stuff in a bathroom and that should be illegal. And they're like, ma'am, this is about lunch funding. Like, can we not do
it? It is very rambling and wild to the point of the beginning of the movie had like a Muslim terrorist and a Chinese man coming across the border, but it's never talked about again.
What if the Chinese guy was actually Uyghur?
if Taylor Sheridan figures out that there are Chinese Muslims, it's going to be very bad. God forbid, are there Mexican Muslims? That would be really, really bad.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, we're over here laughing, but like, I cannot stop thinking about it because probably a year ago with my wife, we started watching Yellowstone and I'd seen a couple other Taylor Sheridan movies, Hell or High Water and...
which is great. And Mystic
Hell or High
Water
is very good. It's like, yeah, and Mystic River. And both of them work in different ways for Sheridan. They're kind of lower budget. They're smaller. They do have that kind of, they're a little bit dumb, but he's way more controlled in a film environment than he was making TV. And when you get to Yellowstone, even in the first season of Yellowstone, you get the energy that this movie has. which is, I made something that's fucking cool, right? Like, cowboys are cool, and shooting people is cool, and driving in big trucks is fucking cool, mm-hmm. and owning a big ranch is cool. That's what Yellowstone is, right? Like, what if there was a cool guy who had a helicopter and he fucked the governor? People that got in his way, he fucking shot him and threw him out in the mountains. That's Taylor Sheridan, right? And his vision of what the CIA is a bunch of extremely cool guys. His vision of what Delta Forces is a bunch of extremely cool guys doing extremely cool shit.
Yeah.
And that's what fucking Sicario 2 is. And I swear to God, if it wasn't for Villeneuve, that's what Sicario 1 would be. He'd be like, see all them Delta Force guys and them Texas Rangers off in that conference room?
I was going to say, I think there's like a line in the conference room where he says, like, either way, I think Brolin's character says, like, I love Texas cops, which hits different in a post-Uvalde world. I'm sorry.
It really does. I think it does if you're from Texas.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very interesting. Villeneuve, the new, oh God.
Villeneuve and Emily Churro. Yeah, that's
well,
it. Like,
he takes Taylor Sheridan's script. Like that scene where they're like in the big room, like the beginning of the mission where Emily Blunt joins in and they're all meeting with all the Delta Force guys. Denis Villeneuve is able to take this like cool guy scene and make it bleak, make it so dark. You can easily see someone being like, that's cool. And me watching this, being like, these are the people running our foreign operation.
It's a bunch of fucking meatheads. Yeah. Right? They are like, cool. They are cool operators.
Just like, oh, they let you out of jail early for good behavior or bad behavior?
You can literally smell like the monster and like the dip coming off of them from the screen because they look like that.
Yeah. And those old Texas Ranger guys, those fucking perfect hats, dude, that is like, I guess they're, I'm sorry, I don't think they're Texas Rangers. They're U.S. Marshals, I think. Okay.
Yeah, again, like just a dream team to go in the Juarez Delta Force, DEA, CIA, and U.S. Marshals.
It's so clear in those first, in the first movie, it's really neat because the Delta Force guys are just planning the operation. They don't give a fuck why. They don't know. They don't care, right? Mm-hmm. They're just like, what's the ROE? Are we going to get to shoot people? And he's like, we'll talk about that later. And they all like chuckle and they're like raring to go because they're like, I'm going to get to shoot somebody today, right? I don't care why. And in the second one, he does give them. He gives them the background. And it's like, these guys don't give a fuck.
No, no. I mean, the second one definitely had that like, I can't believe I was betrayed by my government. It's very anti the state, which is also a little bit of Trumpian thought.
Yeah. Like ideally, like if they wanted like a redemption arc, they just become like Maoist guerrillas in Mexico, like the whole like. But like since it, I'm not too familiar with Sheridan, like it's just gonna be like, oh well, they don't kill the girl. That's the redemption arc for him.
I guess it's too late for them to go to Colombia, huh?
Yeah,
I did expect him to kill the girl just because at the end of Sicario, he just like shoots the two little boys, and you see like their dead bodies. So I was like, oh, they're going to kill this fucking girl. And
he wastes that dude's kids.
Yeah, and then you just see the girl survive. I'm like, oh, okay. Not that I wanted to see her die, but it's definitely like, oh, you're really pulling your punches here.
That Blackhawk shit is just so fucking sick, dude. God damn.
It was really cool.
I mean, just the fact how they murked all those like cartel guys at the end, like just
fuck yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and just Josh Brolin looking like just stern at him, never smiling, just constant, like I don't know, like just yeah, just grimacing the whole time. Doing
I mean, I'll say the first the operator scene on the bridge is lauded as one of the best in film. Right, like
oh, it's so good.
The actions of the operators, the way that they open doors and like place the rifle on the hinge of the door, right, to kind of minimize. I mean, not the car door is not going to protect you from incoming bullet fire, unless like in the second movie you're just in a fucking armored Humvee, I guess. But it does minimize your profile, right? Yeah. Like the quick advance, those guys pop out of the car, quickly advance, drawn, beaded on the guy, right? Just like the operator shit is fucking sick in the first one.
Yeah. It is cool how in the first one, like nothing goes wrong. Like everyone, it's a clean operation, in and out, no problem. No one takes a bullet. And then in the second one, everything gets fucked up.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Which I think is, in a way, maybe would have been more interesting had the movie been, like, put together better. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to deny. Even in the second one, they're rolling down the highway, surrounded by Mexican state police. They've got, like, they've got those fucking technical trucks with, like, the like, M249s, like, mounted on the back. And when he just turns around, starts blasting the fucking Humvee, it's so sick, man. But Connor, you want to ask your question?
Alec, Raphael, is it good propaganda?
I mean, it's good propaganda. The propaganda is like, the border is dangerous, and we need hardened men to patrol and to keep the barbarians at bay or whatever. So yeah, I think the propaganda is good. I think that's the message.
I think in the first one better than the second one, but like maybe that's just because the second one doesn't work on me as well. But I've seen this movie probably 5 or 6 times, and every time I have to remind myself at the end because I'm like, damn, Mexico fucking scary. And then I'm like, wait, no, stop. This is a movie, stop. That kind of drug war, right? The La Zeta style like terror campaign is, as I understand it, pretty much over in Mexico and has been for years, right?
Yeah. I mean, you have the Jalisco Nueva Generación, which are kind of like the violent extreme one. But the thing about being violent and extreme is that you get the whole weight of the state on you, and you get other cartels piling on you, which is what happened to the Zetas. They were too violent. They were threatening, you know, the systems of power, and people didn't like that.
And that's what's interesting is, like, Americans don't really know that part of it's over. If you watch, I guarantee you, if you handed Sicario to anybody who hasn't seen it today, I think they would fully believe that kind of shit is going on right now, because that's going to be one of the only images of their next door neighbor country and a conflict that they've probably heard about but not really seen or looked into that much that they'll ever see.
Yeah,
this is going to be the lasting image of northern Mexico that's probably planted in people's heads.
Yeah,
right. Dirt poor cops, literally, you know, dust football fields and horrendous violence on a daily basis, right?
Yeah.
Just Iraq, right? Right over the border from El Paso.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to add a little more. Yeah. I mean, the violence is still there, but it's moving to other states. That's the thing. And the fact that it's like in it's increased in some states that aren't border states, I think kind of like, you know, makes it so people don't pay attention as much anymore.
And then the flip side of that propaganda, which is the brilliance of the first movie, is that it questions the effectiveness of the plot of the movie in achieving its purpose within the film. And I still walk away from that movie being like, well, you know, you got the CIA for a reason, I guess. And it's like, no, stop doing that. That works really well too, right? Where you come away in the end with this kind of smug satisfaction, right? Where you're like, well, the CIA is bad, but at least they're good at their jobs. And it's like, wait, the movie, even in the movie, they're not good at their jobs.
Yeah.
What am I saying?
This is a movie that your divorced dad, you're visiting him. The conversation has stalled. You pop this on and you're both agreeing this is a badass movie. And you want to stop the conversation right there. You don't want to talk about how this movie, your dad will say, like, you know, this is pretty accurate. And you got to be like, oh my God, dad.
I work with a guy that this happened to. Yeah. And it's like, shut the fuck up, dude.
I have a friend coming over. We're going to watch one of those Planet of the Apes movies. And then afterwards, I'm going to be like, hey, do you want to watch Sicario? Like, I really want to rewatch the first one. I got a new sound bar. I cannot wait to fucking watch the thing with that bass booming, you know? And I cannot wait to watch Sicario 1 again. If I never see Sicario 2 again, it'll be too soon. I don't want to rewatch that one. It's fine. All right. I think that about does it for our review of Sicario 1 and Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado. Rafael, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for giving us some really good insight on, like, the realism behind, like, the, you know, narco gangs and the cartels in Mexico.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's ever something that y'all want to do a deep dive on, I would recommend the series 000. Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime. It's about, like, the whole... it's done by that... it's written by an Italian guy. It's, like, 7 episodes. It goes from Mexico to, like, Italy to, like, Africa.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's created by the guy who directed Sicario 2.
Sicario. Sicario. Sicario.